Maya Angelou was a voice that pushed artistic and racial boundaries for three generations. She opened the eyes and ears of millions of people to continuous struggle and survival for an African-American woman. She was prolific during her 86 years, singer, dancer, civil rights activist, although most people who knew Maya Angelou discovered her as a poet and a writer. Works like And Still I Rise and I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings helped Angelou give voice to her own life, but also helped generations of African-Americans, thinkers and writers, find their voices as well. Bob Hercules and Rita Coburn Wack recount the life of the cultural icon in a new documentary called Maya Angelou and Still I Rise. And in it, they weave together Angelou's broad and artistically varied life using her own writings and appearances to narrate. The film starts with Angelou as a young child when she and her brother moved across the country from Los Angeles to live with her grandmother in the rural segregated town of Stamps, Arkansas. And it was the first place where Maya Angelou learned the painful truth of growing up as a black girl in the Jim Crow South.
When she had to go in the white part of town, even as a little child, she chose to stiffen her back, grit her teeth, and get through it. Because walking in the town, she was looked at with disdain. And that's something that happens in the culture in the South, that it's an unnecessary insult. I'm already a woman. I'm a girl child. I'm already black. And the racism that you feel toward me as really a child, it ruins my childhood. It makes me have to think as a person who has to always be on top of a defense mechanism or to create one or to be crushed by it. And I think what she chose was the words that we start the film off with, and I think it started there.
We may encounter many defeats, but we must not be defeated. That, in fact, it may be necessary to encounter defeats so we can know who the hell we are.
And she had to walk that way through her life after rape, after all these kind of injustices, and not be defeated, and in the process, find her voice and use it.
Let's talk about the awful chapter, the ultimate insult and the ultimate crime that Maya Angelou suffered as a 7-year-old girl, which was being raped by an adult man. And in addition to the trauma and the scars, one of the sequelae of that crime was that the assailant wound up dead.
It was so traumatic to her because she thought, if I talk, more people will die. And so she stopped talking for 5 years. She went mute. Yet what she did was she read and she listened for those 5 years. And so she accumulated an incredible body of knowledge from reading, you know, all the sonnets of Shakespeare and Edgar Allan Poe and all the classics. She read all those books, and it really, I think, profoundly affected her life, as, of course, the trauma did.
Bob Hercules, a lot of people now who may have been exposed to Maya Angelou for the first time, let's say at a presidential inauguration in the 90s, may not have known that she was what would have been called a real radical in the 60s during civil rights.
Absolutely. She was very good friends with Malcolm X, for instance, both in New York and also when she lived in Ghana. Malcolm X came, of course, to Ghana and to some other African countries, and they bonded even stronger when she was living there. He was on his the road to Mecca, and he was in Ghana for a while. And also, she worked for a while for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. She was the Northern coordinator here in New York, actually, in the early 60s. And so she got to know Martin Luther King quite well. She was pretty radical. There was a case where Patrice Lumumba, the president of the Congo, was assassinated, probably with some CIA meddling in the background. They took that, the black community at the time took that as an affront, not only to Africans, but also to African Americans. And so she was very involved in a protest at the United Nations. It became quite a scene where people were throwing punches. And she always said, you know, you got to take it to the streets. She told her son, you know, if you have a strong belief in justice and what's right in the world, you have to act on it.
Rita, there was this transformation later in life for Maya Angelou from radical to popular writer to really matriarch and someone I think of as almost a secular saint toward the end of her career. Can you describe how that transformation took place and how she perceived a sort of this elevation and this matriarchal role that she had later in life?
I think that in the 60s, when she really came into her own, she was working with a lot of people, both white and black, who believed that they could attain freedom, that it was about to be born. And as Bob said, she worked with both Malcolm X and with Martin Luther King, and they were diametrically opposed as to how to achieve something. But she was able to stay in the middle, and she was able to outlive most of these people. They died in their 30s, and she lived to be 86. And she never gave up the hope that reconciliation, forgiveness, and what Dr. King called the beloved community could become attainable. In the middle of that, she reinvented herself with every new thing. And what we have to remember is, if you traveled in the State Department, with the State Department, with Porgy and Bess in the 50s, you got to see a part of the world. She got to see things that made her say things like, people are more alike than unalike. Her eyes were open. She found love across racial lines and had two marriages with white men. And so, coming from the Jim Crow South, she kept reinventing herself. So later on, when people began to look up to her and began to hear her words and see wisdom in them, and then during that inaugural poem, she was able to step into that sense of reinvention. And a lot of people live in the past, and I don't think she lived in the past. She lived in her present.
Bob Hercules, it is rare, as Rita just suggested, for an artist, especially a very vital artist when they're younger, to stay vital in old age, to stay relevant, forget about popular. Even as youth and society kind of, you know, move past them. That never seemed to happen with Maya Angelou.
She was always relevant in our society, even up to right before she passed in 2014. She weighed in on all the big issues of the day. There's a great scene in the film where she talks about the N-word with Common and a few other cases of that.
It's vulgar. It's created to demean a human being. I know black people say, I can use it because I'm black. No, no. If a thing is poison and it's got a skull and bones on it, you can take that content and pour it into Bavarian crystal. It's still poison.
If she were alive today, obviously she'd weigh in very strongly about Donald Trump being president or being president-elect.
Bob Hercules, could you hear Maya Angelou having optimism or hope for the coming presidency, for the coming years? Forget about elections for a moment, but for where the country goes from here.
Well, I think she was always at the core an optimistic person. I mean, she overcame enormous obstacles. The primary thing that she always talked about was courage. This was a very courageous woman, and I think she would tell us to also be courageous, to take on whatever comes down the pike with this Trump presidency and take action, be organized, don't take it lying down. And that's the only way that things can be changed. And she was an agent of change her whole life. So were she alive, she'd be in the thick of it again.
Bob Hercules, thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you, Todd.
And Rita Coburn-Wack, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Rita Coburn-Wack and Bob Hercules are both directors of Maya Angelou and Still I Rise. It's out now.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.